stars in the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Great to be with you. The sun is out, the days are getting longer, and I spent an hour outside in my yard yesterday, Ton. Life is good.
Life is really good. The weather is bouncing all over the place, but this weekend is going to be a great opportunity to get outside and just get things done.
Just breathe, for one thing. I went out and just cleaned up some, you know, of the dead leaves and the, you know, just the perennials that didn't get cut back, and man, it felt good.
Oh, it does.
One little space in my life.
It does. You know, and right now, it's late February. The nurseries are shipping a little bit, and it's not like you can bop in and just get everything you need. But I've dug around my yard a bit, and there's areas the ground is thawed out. And so if you need a tree or, you know, a shrub or something, and the ground's thawed out, you might be able to get it in and just be done with it.
Right. The bulbs are blooming. Tulip bulbs aren't quite there yet. Crocus are out. They're out in huge form at my yard, actually growing in the grass now. So we'll talk about that later.
We will. Hellebores, I've seen those already blooming. That's a little early for them, but they're out too.
Yeah, it's just been beautiful weather. This morning, plant of the week, tulips, because they are, you know, they're getting ready to do their thing as well. So let's talk about tulips. And are there, most people know you plant tulips in the fall and they come up in the spring, but are there varieties that you plant in the spring and they come up in the fall?
No, there's not. Last week we were talking about trying to find a plant of the week. And so we'd kind of discussed tulips and bulbs. And I found an article from actually the state government's WaterWise folks about fall bulbs. And even though it talks about getting these in, the tulips and the other bulbs are just such great options for WaterWise landscaping.
Because they don't take that much water.
They don't. They do not. And they're native to areas of Asia and Eastern Europe, though most of the ones we grow with a climate really similar to Utah. You know, it may be a bit wetter, but what they do is come out in February, March, April, into May when there's still moisture and it's cooler and not everything is leafed out yet. And so there's more available sunlight and they will complete, I don't want to say their life cycle, but what they're going to do, they complete it in the spring and then they go dormant. And as we're getting hotter and drier, they're done for the year. And so they're just a great option that rarely require irrigation that give you so much spring beauty.
Right. And they take so little care as well.
They do. And let them grow. They rarely require fertilizer. If you want to, you can put some on there, but they don't generally need it. And let them grow, and then when the flowers have died back, just cut the flower heads off, not the whole plant. Let them go dormant so the leaves will turn yellow, and at the point when they've turned yellow, you can just cut them back, and you're done for the year.
What is the lifespan of tulip bulbs?
Lifespan depends on the particular type. Most of them, and this is just tulips alone, it's going to be about 3 to 4 years before they decline.
Why is it the older varieties seem to last a lot longer? I have some in my yard that have been there, I don't know, probably a couple decades.
Less hybridization. And so the two types of tulips that are going to last a lot longer are what are called species tulips. And that's exactly what they are. They're the original forms of tulips. And the flowers are a little smaller. They're gorgeous. But they are just more diminutive. And then you have what are called the Darwin tulips. And the Darwins and the species are the two that if you have them for 20, 25 years, it's going to be one of those two.
You know, Thanksgiving Point has their tulip festival every year. And I'm not sure if they do this afterwards, but they would actually sell the bulbs in bags and you could go purchase
those. Yes, they still do. And they have volunteers pulling those out. you know, because it's such a high transition for their plants, it could be that you three in high profile areas in a given year, you might have the plant, the annuals and bulbs swapped out 3 to 4 times a year.
Yeah. When do they actually put those on sale? Like June or something?
In June after the Tulip Festival, June, July, and then you can go get them.
Okay. So explain why it's important to let the leaves go back to yellow and not to cut them before that.
They need to build energy in their roots and the bulb and the roots. And so if you cut them back right when they're done blooming, they may come back the next year, but they're going to come back smaller and they probably won't blossom. And so you need to leave them alone and let them build up that energy so that they can actually send up a flower the next year.
Okay, I have to ask you about the hydroponic tulips, because anybody who went into Costco in the last couple of weeks, that's what I got for Valentine's Day, were these tulips that were grown over water. I'm not going to say in water because the bulb itself isn't in the water. That's something I haven't seen before.
There's always new things coming out like that. And what they will do is put the tulip bulbs into refrigeration, because they require, depending on the variety, anywhere from an 8 to 12 week cold period. It's called a stratification. Mm-hmm. And when the tulips start to just pop out roots at the end of the stratification, they will place them in the trays, or they'll
kind
already
of a
have
mesh
them.
Kind of
yeah,
thing.
And let them root through into water that has nutrient solution in it. So it is a hydroponic situation, and let them bloom out. Now you can try to save them when they're done blooming, you know, gently put them into the ground and see if they will come back. But they're meant to be a longer term flower display.
So they may not come back in the ground.
They may not.
Year?
When you do that with tulips, it always stresses them. And so if you did put them in the ground, I suspect they probably wouldn't flower the next year, but the following year they would.
Okay. So it's not going to kill them.
Probably not.
Okay, so what about if we want to grow them hydroponically again? Can we do that? Or
that's pushing.
Oh, come on. What am I
going to
do with that vase?
That's that old push your luck game show. You'd get a whammy on that.
So could I buy tulip bulbs next fall and try it again?
You can. I mean, if you want to try it, what you would do is purchase them and actually not immediately put them into refrigeration and just hold them. And you need to count about 12 weeks ahead of when you need them. And then put them in your refrigerator. And what you would do is just get a Tupperware or something similar with some sand or potting soil that's wrung out moist level. So moist to the level of wrung out sponge, and just lay them in there and let them refrigerate for that 2 to 3 months and check them weekly. And when you start to see little roots forming, that's when you would put them into the hydroponic solution.
Okay. I'm going to do that, because what am I going to do with this beautiful vase now? I mean, the tulips are gorgeous, and I thought, oh, I'm going to plant them in the ground. And I thought, well, what if I could do this again?
You could probably, even before that, and you'd need to have them a little isolated, but you could do paper whites.
Okay.
In November and December.
Okay. So when you are going to put them in the ground, do you cut off the roots or just leave the roots on there?
It leave the roots intact as much as you can, and that's where the difficulty comes from. Is that the roots that go into the water aren't prepared for the soil. And so when you put them in the ground, you need to dig actually not just a hole as wide as the bulb, but wider. And you're going to need to fit the soil into a cone shape for those roots to fit on, and then bury them in so that the leaves are above ground. And it's not easy.
Okay, I'm glad I asked that question. I was just going to dig a hole and throw them in there, so, you know.
Yeah, and just because they're actively growing, and when things are actively growing like that, they become quite difficult to transplant.
Okay.
So it's just one of those things that, in theory, yes, you can do it, but it takes a lot of care.
Okay. And this morning, the plant of the week is the tulip. We've been talking about its water-wise properties, and you can find out more about it on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. Take a break. Coming back with your calls and your comments, the phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. Text us at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you this morning, taking your calls 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Let's go to our phone lines. Timothy is on the line in Mill Creek. Good morning, Timothy. What was your question?
Hi, guys. I'm under the impression for my rose bushes that I'm supposed to trim them basically almost to the ground or leave, you know, 4 or 5 inches in the fall. I procrastinated doing that this year and I wondered, is it too late for me to trim my rose bushes down in preparation for the spring?
Well, whoever told you that needs to reevaluate their life choices. You may have them sit in a rocking chair facing the wall to think about giving you false information. So I'm glad you didn't.
It looks so good during the winter.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't. If they're the hybrid tea roses that you would cut and bring in the house, you know, as a flower display, mid-March is actually when you prune those. And you prune them to between knee and thigh height, depending on their age and size, and prune them back anywhere to 3 or 4 to 5 or 6 main canes.
Okay. Now, these are pretty small bushes. You know, calling them a bush is probably being generous. They're pretty small, and they line my fence, and they produce a very small rose. I'm sorry, I don't know the specific type. But so they never get, I mean, they probably grow, you know, in the late spring and early summer, they probably grow to about a height of 3 or 4 feet.
Okay, and do they give you the long-stemmed roses, or are they more of a bush rose?
They do.
Okay, so yeah, and this, what I would do, wait till mid-March, and I would prune them minimally, and if you've got good canes on them, cut away the side branches, and just leave, if the canes seem they're alive, just leave them intact this year.
Okay, great. Hey, thank you.
Great, thanks so much for your call this morning. People are excited about roses. Two other listeners texting about roses as well. So mid-March, knee height.
Knee height to thigh height, depending on their maturity and vigor.
And 4 to 5 canes.
4 or 5 canes, yeah. If they are 20 years old, it is fine to leave 6 or 8 canes and leave them a little higher. If they are younger, you know, 4 or 5 years old, then around knee height is fine.
Okay, that made a big difference because mine are definitely older. Okay, next person wants to know, is it too early to trim back their ivy?
Well, I would wait for mid-March, but ivy's
nothing
just
kills
ivy.
It.
No,
are you kidding
nothing
me?
It is. Nothing kills it.
It is like totally...
Yeah.
I love the ivy when I planted it. It was beautiful for the first 10 years, and now it's just taken over the place.
Yeah, I saw a home where the homeowners had it growing on a brick house. It was an older home, and they went in and ripped it all off, and the brick was, the exterior of the brick was really damaged because the English ivy and Boston and Virginia creeper both, all three of them will actually exude a calcium lime into wood and brick to stick. And so they literally cement themselves. And so every vine you rip off, you're ripping a little bit of lime out of there that rips the brick or the wood.
I have them on my posts on my front porch. And when I rip them off, they've left just this awful, I'm going to have to go through and get a sander or something to get that off.
Yeah.
It is cement. There is
it
no
is.
Doubt about it. And it's worse than cement. Cement will chip off. This stuff just is like a glue cement.
It is. When I see buildings like that, I was like, man, I hope you wanted that because it's either permanent or you're going to have a lot of damage.
Matt is on the line in American Fork. Good morning, Matt. What was your question?
Hi. I was just wondering, we're looking at trying to solarize our garden this summer. And just wondering if you could kind of talk me through the process involved in that and what materials I would need to do something like that.
Can you turn down your radio? I think we're on a little bit of a delay in case someone curses. So there's a little bit of feedback.
So we can hear ourselves talking. All right, go ahead.
Is it network?
That's better. Thank you.
Are you there?
Yes,
yeah,
go
we're
ahead.
Here. So what I would recommend doing is you need construction grade UV resistant clear plastic. So you can pick that up from a hardware store, online, or places like Home Depot, maybe. It's fairly easy to find, and you want a thicker mill. I don't know the exact, but you don't want to be using the drop plastic that you do for painting. You need it thicker. So you stretch it over the area you want to solarize, but you want the ground level and the soil slightly moist at least. And then you'll do that sometime early to mid-May, and you may get plant growth underneath initially. But as we get into the high 80s and 90s, you leave it for at least 6 weeks, but better to do it from May through September. And so when you peg it down, if you have to do seams, overlap it at least a foot and then use landscape staples, push down in or rocks or something so that your seam doesn't blow up and there's not opportunity for weeds to grow around and up. And then around the sides, it needs to be stretched fairly tight and then secured. What I like to do is put rocks on the edges, or if you have access to them, but just a shovel of dirt, you know, so that it's completely covered and so the wind can't get under it. And you may put rocks here and there in the middle just to help keep that plastic down.
Okay. If I have like little PVC pipe risers because of our drip system in there, do I just go around those?
You can. It may get hot enough to melt or warp the PVC.
Okay.
And so I don't know if they'll unscrew and then you could put some caps in or something, or, you know, another thing you could try, but it'll get 120 to 160 degrees underneath that plastic. And so I suspect that you may have some of them heat up and not melt, but just get soft and bend.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right, Matt, thanks so much for your call this morning. We're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open, or you can text us at 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning, taking your calls 801-575-8255 or your text questions at 57500. Next listener, Ton, says they had blister mites on their pears last year. And after they prune today, should they spray a dormant spray as well?
No, it's too early. I wouldn't. It's not that they're necessarily wasting their money, but it's just too early. So I would download what's called the USU Home Orchard Pest Management Guide. It's a mouthful.
Wow.
But the Home Orchard Pest Management Guide has pictures of the bud stages. And if you leaf through it, it will make recommendations on when to do things in early spring and late winter according to the bud stage. And so it'll go from tight bud to the progression in the different fruit trees we grow until they're past bloom. And it will give you the picture and the stage where you want to do the dormant spray. But I compliment them for being on top of this, because a dormant spray can really control those blister mites well. But they just need to wait. And so I would download that guide. Also subscribe to the USU Pest Lab updates. They're free. And just a quick search online for USU Pest Lab update subscription will bring you to it. And there's fruit and vegetables that you can subscribe to. And we send those out for free. And we don't share emails or spam or anything. But they will also tell you down to about the day you need to do that too.
All right, next listener wants to know, can you use Triple 10 fertilizer for trees that are potted in 5 to 20 gallon root pouches?
You can. The rate is something that gets a little hard sometimes because it's probably a lawn fertilizer. And just using, you know, ball field approximations, you know, in a 20 gallon container, if the volume is that big, I don't know that I would do more than around a quarter to a third of a cup per tree. What they should probably do is email J.D. Gunnell, who's a horticulturist in Cache Valley, because his entire professional career revolved around field production of containerized and bald and burlap trees. And one of his research areas was fertilization. And so he'll know how much to put down. And some of it is going to depend on the amount of nitrogen. And so because that triple 10 has 10% nitrogen, you would put double the amount down that you would a 20-0-0 or a 20-20-20. And that's why I'm hedging a little bit. And so if you do a Google search of USU Extension Cache County, JD's phone number and email will come up. And I would just shoot him an email telling them what you're doing, the fertilizer available, and he can give you some pretty good rates.
Okay. Mark is on the line in Salt Lake City. Good morning, Mark. What was your question?
Hi, I bought a new pickle plant, and I bought a grow light from Amazon. It's a two-prong LED, and like I normally do with plants, I overdo things, and I didn't know how much sunlight it needed, so I just put the LED lights over it as close as I could get it, and then I ran it for days, and to be frank, it started to look kind of gray.
Yeah,
and so I cut back on the light, and it seems to be okay, but I really don't know. I'm not educated on how many hours on an LED grow light. It says 6,000 K on it.
Well, a photo period of somewhere between 12 and 14 hours daily is sufficient, and you want it 6 inches above the foliage. So, and then if you can put the plant next to a window, that never hurts, you know, with that supplemental sunlight, but you always have it 6 inches above the foliage. And the plants in my office, we have on grow lights, and their photo period is from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Okay, now another question I just had, since you mentioned it. I have some succulents next to a south-facing window, but I know there's a total difference between being outside and being behind a window. How much good does it do to have any plants next to a window?
It's always good. You want them off to the side, especially in the summer, so that just because of the extra heat from the window, but it's a great place to grow plants. So,
okay, thank you.
Yep, all right, Mark, thanks for your questions this morning. Next listener, Ton, wants to know, is there anything that they can do now or in the near future to prevent the horde of elm seed beetles that they had last year?
Unfortunately, and this just isn't me being sarcastic or mean, but getting rid of the elm trees is the option, because the elm seed beetle feeds on elm seeds. And because Siberian elm, which is kind of a trashy tree that we don't plant anymore, but it's really common along old stream banks and ditch banks and just in our yards even, because those seeds from the Siberian elm are produced in spring and early summer, it's like we've built a big buffet for them and they're there. And so no amount of spraying is going to get rid of them. And so you may try to seal up your house, making sure that cracks in the foundation are caulked around the window wells, the door sweeps, you know, they can fit through under a quarter of an inch gap. And so those door sweeps need to pretty much almost rub on the ground. But it may be better to invest in those sorts of things. And if they are congregating on your house, you might be able to use a horticultural soap to spray them every few days to knock them down to keep them from trying to get in that way. But
that was a very unsatisfying answer.
Until the trees are gone, then you're not going to get rid of them. I mean, there's an old scene from The Matrix where I think Neo goes in to get his fortune told by, I don't remember if they call her the prophet or the oracle.
Okay.
But he goes in and it's not good news. You know, he's not the chosen one, but she's like, even though you're not, have some chocolate chip cookies. They just make things better. That's
telling
one of those situations.
To go eat chocolate chip cookies for their fulfillment.
Yeah, and do it before the elm seed bugs come out so they don't get into the cookies.
All right. Is it too early to put down Preen?
It is. People are just really chomping
so
at the bit.
I know.
And I mean, it's cool enough that it's not going to break down quickly, but I've noticed, I mean, the one thing out there that you might put it down for are the Burr Buttercup, and I've noticed that they're already germinating. It seems like they almost germinate under the snow.
So it won't hurt anything if
you
put it down
now. It won't hurt anything, but you may miss the mark for a lot of weeds and have to reapply it in the spring.
So when should they put it down?
I would start sometime in mid to late March, depending, and then you'll need to read the label, because depending on the soil type, you reapply everywhere any time from every 6 weeks to a few months. But they're going to have to look at the label. And for the fall weeds, the actual time I would put some preen down is in mid-September, you know, early to mid-September, because the Burr Buttercup, the cheatgrass, the fillery, there's a lot of these winter weeds that germinate at that period of time. And so if you have preen in your flower beds then, you're going to catch a lot of them, and it will make things better instead of trying to put it down now, because a lot of these weeds will germinate with soil temperatures at 32 to 35 degrees. And so you've missed the opportunity. And so that pre-emergent actually goes down in early fall.
All right. Before we take a break, you had a Facebook Messenger photo you wanted to talk about.
Well, there's somebody that has some fruit trees that are growing crooked out of the ground. And
they're very small.
They're small. New. If the trees are sturdy and well-rooted, I don't know that I would do anything. You know, we don't like looking at trees with crooked trunks, but it doesn't impact the health of the trees.
But it wouldn't hurt it.
It wouldn't hurt it if the person was gentle. And so what they would do is put a stake in the ground opposite the direction they want the tree to go. And then they are opposite the way the tree is facing. And then they would use some cloth wrapped around the trunk so that they don't score up the trunk. And then they would use some twine or rope and just gently pull the tree back and tie it off to the stake and leave it intact for one calendar year.
Oh,
and that
wow.
will straighten it. But if the person doesn't want to and the trees are well rooted, they're fine.
All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with your phone calls. Sherry, you're up next. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Good morning. Thanks for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton taking your calls at 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500. Next listener wants to know, Ton, can they fertilize their trees yet? They're not saying what kind of trees, though. And any suggestions for a flowering vine for a trellis? They say they've had very little luck with clematis.
Clematis can be a little tricky. They like to be in full sun, but like to have cool roots. And so what I'd recommend doing if they want to try the clematis is plant it. Look for a variety called Jackman or Jackmanii, J-A-C-M-A-N-I-I. And that one seems to be the most tolerant of our conditions, resilient, and it lives for several years. Blooms in late spring and early summer with a purple blossom. But that's kind of the starter, clematis, and it's going to be an easier one to grow as far as the spring blooming ones. So other flowering vines, I mean, most of them are going to be pretty aggressive. They could try to find something along the lines of American wisteria. They're not as aggressive as other wisterias, but wisteria would be an option. Then, but there's always the standard honeysuckle and also the trumpet creeper, but both of those are aggressive and they need space. And so I'm assuming if they were trying to grow clematis, that they need something with a little bit more limited size. And so that's why I might try the Jackman or maybe American wisteria, something like Blue Moon. The other option, I think, would be to maybe try some Morning Glory vine. And this is not bindweed. It is a seed that you plant, and they do get pretty big, but they do die at the end of the season. And so they still will stretch 15 or 20 feet, but you have a reprieve because they die and they bloom all summer.
All right. What about, is it time to fertilize their trees?
They can. I would give it another month. The trees are just breaking. When I say breaking dormancy, they're not leafing out. Mm-hmm. But as the ground thaws, the tree starts to generate new roots and absorb nutrients in preparation for leafing out. And so I would give it until mid-March.
Okay. Sherry is on the line in Harriman. Good morning, Sherry. How can we help you?
Good morning. A couple of years ago, my husband gave me a rose bush for Mother's Day. I planted it, and last summer it was absolutely beautiful, and it bloomed all summer. For Valentine's, he gave me similar, different kind of rose. There's no tag identifying it, but it's obviously much colder right now. And I don't know if it's safe to go out and plant this right now, or should I try to keep it alive till May when it's warmer?
I would wait until May. I would put it somewhere that you have it in a bright location, a south or a west window. Turn it once a week, and when you water it, just make sure that you don't get a lot of water on the foliage. And keep it away from heat vents so that it doesn't dry the leaves out from that forced air coming out. But if you can get it until May, you definitely can plant it outside.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
All right, Sherry, thanks for your call this morning. We have about a minute here. Ton, next person wants to know if dormant oil can be applied if Fuji apple tree buds are closed with no color showing, or is it too late?
Too early. It's too early to be putting down dormant oil. So we need to have our gardener's significant other get the loppers. It's actually time to prune a lot of trees. But where you have had your lockers locked up by your significant other, give them the dormant oil until at least mid-March.
All right. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. When we come back, we'll take your calls following our top of the hour feature, 801-575-8255, the number to call. You can also text us with your questions, 57500.
Never seen the sky so blue. Birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just
day.
A sunny day.
Yeah. Hey.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. A shortened edition of the KSL Greenhouse this morning as we make way for our BYU basketball coverage. The home show comes up at 10, and then pregame coverage begins at 11 right here on KSL News Radio. Top of the hour feature, we want to talk with a special guest this morning. We're going to talk about giant pumpkins, and with us is Clint Nash, the president of the Utah Giant Pumpkin Growers. And Clint, thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Interesting topic. How in the world do you get those pumpkins that size?
Yeah, There's a lot of work to it. I grew my first pumpkin about 1999, I think it planted there, 2000. And, you know, it got just over 100 pounds. I'm like, this thing's huge. It's so, and then I found some, there is a certain seed, a certain type of pumpkin, the Atlantic dill. And the genetics on that, we're not totally sure what all they're capable of, but it can produce some just gigantic pumpkins. So it's pretty fun to see.
So for our listeners, the giant pumpkins, and we're not talking about big jack-o'-lanterns, but we're talking about pumpkins that can weigh over 1,000 pounds if you do everything right and the climate works for you. But if someone wants to get started, you know, they've got small kids or just might become a hobby. What do you recommend to folks that want to get started with giant pumpkins?
So, yeah, I mean, this is a good time of year to do that. So, so yeah, so we're the, So that, you know, the club light here is the Utah Giant Pumpkin Growers. So we have a few ways to help people get started. We're actually doing a little seminar at Mountain Valley Seeds in Salt Lake next month on March 23rd. We're going to have a couple people that have grown these pumpkins. We're going to have a class on some of the basics on what to do, and kind of just to, you know, explain some of the basic things. Again, you can go, you know, depending on how much time and money you have to spend on it, you can just spend a little and have just a little bit of time and still get a really big pumpkin. And then we're going to have a more advanced class and everything. And also on our website, but pretty much seeds. So we have seeds for people. If any, you know, if you go to UtahPumpkinGrowers.com, you know, there are different ways we can get you seeds. That's the key. That's the first thing, is you need one of these seeds, which we have some for people, if, you know, for people that want to try this. And then from there, you know, there's also some explanation on our website about some of the, you know, steps you need to do to grow them, you know, as big as you want and can or whatever. But
okay, Clint, I have to ask you though, you've been doing this since 1999. Why is this your passion?
Yeah, it's crazy. I know it's, so, I mean, I have a lot of hobbies and stuff. It's just, to me, I just love seeing things grow. And so I originally planted a garden to grow stuff to make salsa. It was one of my favorite foods. Like, you know, I grew tomatoes and peppers and stuff. And then I saw a packet of seeds in a store saying, you know, these could grow up to 100 pounds. I'm like, wow, that'd be crazy. So I did that. And then I just kind of got addicted to it. Now, there are other, you know, I try to grow giant gourds now and stuff too. But these pumpkins, like, it's crazy. They can grow up to 50 pounds a day. I mean, if you weren't doing anything in the day, like, especially when they're smaller, you could probably sit and actually noticeably see them grow. That's how fast they can grow.
What do you do with them after you've grown them to that huge size?
Oh, we have some fun with them. But we actually have a regatta out at Daybreak in mid-October where we, if they're over about 500 pounds, an average size adult can use them as a boat. So we'll kind of, you know, cover out the top, take all the insides out, and you can sit in them, and we actually race them across the lake. We also, toward the end of the year, we drop them on cars and stuff like that with a crane. We have a fun event where we do that. And then, you know, we've had them carved into, it's fun to have them carved into different things. You know, with that big of a size, we have some really great pumpkin carvers here in Utah that do that. And so there's a lot of fun that you can have with them.
Okay. I need a couple of quick tips on how to just grow giant pumpkins before we let you go. Give us a couple of quick tips.
Yeah. So again, you need one of these seeds, Atlantic Dill. Make sure you get that type of seed. And then pretty much if you want to get it as big as possible, you want to make sure there's only one pumpkin on there. So pick off all the other, you know, you're going to, I mean, we hand pollinate them. You don't have to necessarily do that. But once you have a pumpkin, if you want to max it out, only use that one. You can also bury vines because the plant will feed off everywhere that a leaf comes up. Below that, a root will grow under. And if you water the entire plant, bury the vines, it's going to suck up nutrients from the entire plant and feed that pumpkin. So those are some of the basic things. And then pretty much just try to keep them healthy. There's, you know, I have an insect net that I put over it because I've had such issues with squash bugs and stuff like that. But trying to keep them as healthy as possible. Water them enough, feed them, you know, water the entire plant. Those are the basic things to get started and you know, to get one of these giant pumpkins.
All right. This is a pretty competitive group, isn't it?
Yeah, we definitely have fun with it. But, yeah, so, you know, we have a couple of way-off events at the end of the year. We have one up in Logan on Center Street, which is really fun up there in Cache Valley. And then we have one at Gateway. So, like, last year So my pumpkin was just a little bit smaller than my good friend Dave, and but when they came to the weight, mine actually weighed just a little bit more. So it was, I know, really disappointing to him, but we do have fun with it. We are competitive, but we also, you know, we have fun doing that. We kind of push each other to, you know.
All right, Clint, we appreciate you being with us. And again, for those folks who want to know more, want to take a class, March 23rd at Mid Valley Seeds, and you can find the seeds and more information at utahpumpkingrowers.com.
I think that Mountain Valley is the other name for that is True Leaf Market, is kind of the encompassing. So if you're more familiar with True Leaf Market, that should be the same place. So.
Okay. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Next listener, Ton, says they have a 10-year-old Zelkova tree in their park strip, and one root is starting to lift the sidewalk. Ooh. And they plan on cutting it out, but they want any suggestions.
And that may be the option. Unfortunately, you know, a Zelkova, if it's just regular village green or green vase, will get 40 feet tall. And in a 3-foot wide park strip, that will lift the sidewalk over time.
Does it hurt the tree when you cut it out?
Absolutely, it does. And it makes the tree more prone to toppling in wind because that root isn't stabilizing and anchoring the tree from that direction.
But there's not much else they can
do. No, there's not. There's not much else they can do. And so if you put Zelkovas in a park strip, you need to do City Sprite or what's the other? There's a couple of them that are just beautiful little trees that get 15 to 20 feet instead of the wireless is the other one. And I don't know why they would have named it that, but the implication is that it doesn't grow up into power lines. That's why they called it wireless Zelkova. So, but wireless and City Sprite are the two, but unfortunately that's the option.
Next listener is in West Davis County and they want to know, can they start trimming their dogwood and Rose of Sharon?
Give it another. I mean, if they need to, they definitely can. It's the chances, just looking at the longer term forecast, we're supposed to stay warmer. But if we dip down into single digits or, you know, around 8 or 10 degrees and they've just pruned, with plants already starting to slowly break dormancy, they could run into a few problems. So 90% chance they will be absolutely fine. But if they can wait another 3 weeks, I would.
The next person wants to know if they can begin overseeding.
Yeah, if it's in the grass, that's fine. If you may run the risk of birds finding the seed, but if it's in between the existing grass, then it's much harder for them. That's fine.
We're seeing a bunch of primrose in the markets, and this next listener wants to know, when can they plant them outside?
I would give it until mid to late March.
Okay. Chuck is on the line in Spanish Fork. Good morning, Chuck. What was your question?
Good morning. Yes, a couple of years ago, I bought 2 peach trees from Bare Root. And last summer, I bought some spray to spray on them to keep the borers away. But last week, I was out looking at them, and one of them looks like it's got sap coming out of the near the base, and I sprayed that stuff like once a week or every week. It was, I can't remember the name of the stuff I used that they recommended from the nursery, but I'm wondering what more can I do, and is my tree going to survive this?
Well, you can go dig around the tree a little bit and see if the gum is right at the base of the tree. At the soil level or just a little below, that's probably a borer of some type. It could be greater peach tree borer. It could also be a flat headed borer. But at this point, there's really nothing you can do. Just let it come out. And the tree's not necessarily dead, but I would probably, if you're spraying weekly, they probably gave you a product containing spinosad. And I would switch over to maybe something along the lines of the high yield pet garden and livestock spray. It's a little bit stronger and you focus on the base of the tree, especially. So you spray the lower limbs and trunk and really focus around the base at the soil level. And you're going to spray from early June through mid-September.
Okay, so that's the only thing I can do to prevent these is a spray. I can't wrap the base of the tree.
No, you can't. They'll get through it, and that's actually going to potentially harbor more pests and diseases. You can wrap the tree in the winter with a white tree tape, but it needs to come off in March. And what you're doing with that wrap is actually keeping the trunk cooler so that it doesn't heat up in the sunlight and have sap flow that then the sap freezes at night and damages the bark and attracts the borers in because it's a damaged tree. But there's no barrier that you can put on there, paint or wrap, that will keep those out, that won't potentially do more harm to the tree than just having the tree sprayed once a week.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right, Chuck, thanks for your call this morning. I know we just talked about overseeding, Ton, but seeding lawn is a little bit different.
No,
still too early.
It is. The birds will come in and just clean your seed out. So sometime in April, just when you can work the soil and nighttime temperatures are at least in the 40s.
Next person would like to know, is the slender, I believe it's pronounced Hinoki cypress, a good tree for northern Utah?
It's okay. It may need a little afternoon shade. Hinoki cypress is especially conifer here, where it's a little bit cooler in the summer and more humidity, it's much more common. But there are several cypress and species that we grow here on a limited basis that if you have them where they don't get a lot of reflected heat or maybe even a little bit of afternoon shade, they do okay.
Most popular questions today, when can I trim my rose bushes and when can I plant grass seed?
Mid-March for the roses.
It's so funny because they're just, you know, those are the questions that are coming in this morning. One that I have for you, I was mentioning how the crocus are just doing great and the flower beds, they look beautiful, but what about those that are getting into my lawn?
They're okay.
But won't they eventually just expand and like just take over the lawn?
Well, they
or
may,
does it just
it's
kind
not
of
that they take
choke
over
them out.
The lawn, but as you mow and the leaves are still intact, that will reduce their vigor, but they go dormant so early that crocus in the lawn are not usually a concern. And, you know, my 25 years working in horticulture, no one has ever said crocus have taken over my lawn.
Yeah.
You know, there are other bulbs, especially like Star of Bethlehem, which are very problematic.
Oh, right.
But the crocus, because they're usually done by April, they just aren't too much of a concern.
Right. And plus, they have just such, the foliage is just so thin that
it
it's
is.
Not as big a deal as some
it
of the
is.
Other
and,
things.
And when they're done blooming, especially after a mowing, they just blend right into the grass.
Yeah, it's not really a problem. Next question for you. Grass growing into the flower beds. I've noticed, I don't know, everything seems to grow in the winter that you don't want to grow. But man, I have one section, and I know this is a problem for others, where I have just a ton of grass growing into the flower beds.
Is it from the lawn?
Mm-hmm.
All you can really do is every
this
month
to 6 weeks.
This is
properties that are, you know, a couple decades old, right?
Yeah, you have to get a spade and just re-edge the flower bed and get that spade 6 inches to a foot deep so it severs the roots and the underground runners of the Kentucky bluegrass. But if you'll do that every 6 weeks and it is some work, they will behave. But if you don't, those underground runners, which are, you know, 6 inches to a foot underground, will start popping up in your flower beds.
Okay. So I need to do some serious work in my front flower bed. All right. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Text us 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. Taking your calls at 801-575-8255. Text us at 57500. Next listener, Ton, wants to know, what kind of broadleaf weed and grass killers can they use in the temperatures that we have right now?
None. It's just too cold. You know, it needs to be above 55 for a good 24 hours or at least a 12-hour block. And you know, if anything, hand pull. If the weeds are up, maybe a weed torch just because it's cool and, you know, the soil's moist and things. But you're usually into mid to late March before it's warm enough for broadleaf weed killers. And so glyphosate products, it needs to be above 55. There are some specialized lawn weed killers that are mostly for professionals that can be used at temperatures around 55. They're nothing to be fooled with by beginners, but generally late March is the soonest.
Next listener says they put straw from their chicken coop over their raised vegetable beds. Will it break down, or do they need to remove the straw before planting this spring?
You know, if it was just on the surface, they may be able to plant through it, you know, giving room for seeds and different things. But I think the thing I wouldn't recommend is tilling it in at this point. That straw takes a while to break down, and it can actually rob the soil of nitrogen. And so if there was a lot of chicken manure in it, I might get a soil test done to make sure that the soil is not too salty. And if it were, there are things they can do by leaching the salts out. But, you know, I would get a soil test done to know for sure.
Better tell them how they do that.
So there's two ways. BYU and USU both test soil locally. And you go to usual.usu.edu. So usual.usu.edu, and you want the routine test, or you can call BYU's analytical laboratory and just say you've had some manure on some raised beds over the winter and what testing they recommend. But the cost for either lab before shipping, you know, you've got to ship them as samples, around $30 to $35.
Okay, next listener wants some ideas on how to manage yucca plants, like trimming the dead leaves and such.
I cut the dead leaves out and otherwise just leave them be. I don't know what specifically they're looking for. When they flower, you can cut the flower head out toward the base so you can deadhead it that way, but they're pretty low maintenance.
Okay. Do they get really big, though? Can you control the size a little bit?
You can't. If you try to dig around them, a lot of times you leave roots behind and you start just getting pups coming up everywhere.
Oh.
So you need to plant a species that will stay within the confines you want. And so the standard one is called Adam's needle yucca. And most of them are spineless. They won't, when you walk against them, they don't poke you. But there are other yucca out there that stay smaller or bigger depending on your needs. But an Adam's needle yucca, which is 90%, which are 90% of what we grow, over 20 years will spread 3 or 4 feet with pups coming up, and you get a bed of them instead of just one.
I don't have that much space.
No, and so they may need to look into some of the smaller yucca.
All right. Garth is on the line in Grantsville. Good morning, Garth. What was your question this morning?
My question, I heard you talking about dormant oil, but what about copper fungicide? When would be a good time to apply that?
I would give it until mid-March, and download that homeowner pest management guide, and it'll give you the timing according to bud stages. And there, I wish I could just give you a calendar date, but because all years are different, like this year, we're probably going to move the trees along a little faster. Last year, it may have been late March or early April, but this year it may be mid-March. And so you can see those pictures of the bud stages in that home orchard pest management guide. And it'll tell you when to do the copper spray according to the bud stage. And you just look at the tree and compare them. The other thing is subscribing to the USU Pest Lab updates, and they will tell you usually down to the day when you need to spray.
Okay. I have one other question. What about buying weed in your lawn? When's a good time to try to get rid of that?
Oh, if you're using quinclorac in mid-spring is fine. So when it starts to come up, and the vines are around 6 inches to a foot long and haven't really started to flower yet, is when you would spray.
Okay.
And you want a quinclorac product.
Okay. Is that like a WD or 2,4-D?
No, it's not. It's not. Right. It's some product names would include Q4 Plus is one. And that does have, I think it might have 2,4-D in it, but Q4 Plus or Image all-in-one lawn weed killer.
Okay. And that is the big box stores, or do I need
You're going to have to go to an IFA or Steve Regan or a local garden center for both of them.
Okay.
Okay,
right. Thank you.
Garth, thanks for your call this morning. Somebody on there said, yeah, the pups on the yucca come up everywhere.
They do.
Okay, Ron is now on the line in Orem. Good morning, Ron. What was your question?
Yes, I wonder if you could talk to the idea of planting an Asian pear tree. I understand they're susceptible to fire blight, and if there's anything I can do to help prevent that.
There is, and there's a few things you can do. I think Colorado State has a list of Asian pear varieties that are at least moderately resistant to fire blight, that you could look for those varieties. They aren't the Nishiki or 20th Century or some of these that are super common at the garden centers, but they are out there. But otherwise, what you're going to want to do is prune minimally so that you are not creating. If you prune too much, it creates a lot of juvenile growth, which is much more susceptible to the blight than mature growth. And so you prune in the spring, you're only cutting around 10 to 15% of the branches out. You're going to be proactive looking for the cankers. And then when the trees are in blossom, you're going to need to use a fire blight spray on those blossoms and watch USU's updates so that you can do everything you can to prevent the infections.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, Ron. Thanks so much for your call this morning. We're going to take a break, come back with the final segment of the show. Number to call, 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open, and you can text us at 57500. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton taking your calls and questions. We have Jeanette, who is on the line in Orem this morning. And good morning, Jeanette. What was your question?
Oh, good. Thank you. We have a kind of a weed that's out here next to our house, and we've been working on it. It's like a dark clover, and it has little yellow flowers on them. And it seems like the more we dig them up, the more they seem to produce. Is there a pre-emergent or something that we could put on them to get rid of them?
Is it in your lawn?
No.
Okay. So where's it coming up? Is it a gravel drive, or what's the situation?
It's just right next to our house where we have plants and whatever.
Okay.
And it's just, I've never seen anything like this before.
Are you growing any edible plants in that area?
No. Well, down the way we did, but not there.
Okay. It's a plant called Black Medic, and it's actually related to clover, but it's more closely related to alfalfa. And it's a biennial or short-lived perennial plant. And so what I would recommend doing is digging out, if it's not too much of a chore, digging out anything you can find to get bare ground, and then using a pre-emergent gallery would be the one I would use. I'm trying to remember the active in that. It's not prodiamine. It's isoxaben. So let me have you write down a name, because if you can't find the trade name gallery, isoxaben is usually available from local garden centers. And so it's spelled isoxabin, I believe, isoxaben. And that particular pre-emergent is good for broadleaf weeds. So anything coming from seed. And so if you had that cleaned out and you knew that it was relatively weed-free, you could put isoxaben in there. But if you put a pre-emergent down, you cannot grow anything in that bed from seed.
Oh, that's good to know, because I have a couple of lily plants that are in there, too, and that was what was concerning me.
Well, the isoxaben won't hurt your lilies because they're already established. But if they, let's say you took a sweet alyssum seed out there and spread it, the isoxaben would kill it as it tried to germinate.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate
it. Yeah, so
this.
You would just, I mean, it's kind of like preen, and you could try some preen in there too. But the isoxaben, I think, is going to be a little more critical, because it just does a lot better job against those broadleafed weeds than many other pre-emergent products.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
All right. Thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says they want to replace their heavily shaded grass lawn with native plants. They have no idea where to start. Do you have advice or resources that they should check out?
For the time we have, I mean, this is a 15-minute conversation at least.
Oh.
But if the grass is dying out, there's a lot of native plants that will not thrive in that, if the shade's so deep that it's killing the grass. you're just not going to go in there with native plants and have them thrive. And so they're going to need to try to get more sunlight in there. And then there are many shade tolerant native plants, starting with like some native coral berries or snowberries, out in some currants and things. And we could have that conversation. But if the shade is so deep that it's killing the grass, I think that most natives would struggle.
Okay. Next listener wants advice on removing a choke cherry from the middle of a lilac bush without hurting the lilac.
It's doable.
Okay.
And what they would need to do is cut the choke cherry so that there's still some stump left. I would leave at least a foot and then go in there with concentrated Roundup, and just, you might have to use almost like an eyedropper or one of those science stylets that are not stylets, but the, what do you call them? They suck up liquids, they're plastic,
mm-hmm.
at any rate, and you're just going to drizzle that over the fresh cut stump so you're not getting it on the lilac. Glyphosate, the active ingredient, isn't soil active, and so it stays in the root system of the cherry and doesn't harm the lilac. If they were to use something like Toradon, that would kill the lilac too.
Okay, next listener wants to know, what are grape leaf miners and how do they prevent them?
Grape leaf miners are just a pest insect that over the last 10 or 15 years have become much more problematic. And they suck the juice out of the leaves in late summers when they're at their peak. And so if you have had them and they've really damaged your grapes, you need to go in starting in July and watch for them. And when you see them, you need to do a spray. But if you have not thinned your grapes and pruned them annually, it's very difficult because the vines are so thick. But you have to spray the undersides of the leaves. And you may be able to use a spinosad product, but there are some yard and garden sprays out there that are registered for them. But people will go, like, oh, I sprayed. It's usually they didn't spray the undersides of the leaves.
Okay, final question of the morning. Person's having problems with pavement ants, and they want to know when to apply and what type of poison.
When they are active, there's several options. The slower acting baits are probably the best longer term solution because the ants, it's just a food that the ants like that have a slow acting poison that they feed to the queen. And then the queen eats it and dies. And then the colony dies out. They may have to try two or three of them.
All right, that's it for the KSL Greenhouse Show for this week. A complete show next week from 8 to 11. And if you didn't get enough of the greenhouse, you woke up late, you can check us out in podcast form at KSLpodcast.com. Some of our features this morning, the plant of the week was the tulip, and then we talked about giant pumpkins at 9 o'clock. So you can catch that on the podcast, or you can find out more information on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. Ton, have a great weekend. And then we'll see you all on Monday at noon.